Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight!
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Dave's Gone By on this April 8th Easter Sunday, and still, actually, it's a Passover Sunday as well. It's just we've already had one almost Passover Sunday, so we're kind of getting tired of that. But happy Easter to all the listeners and Passover to all the rest of the listeners, etc., and so forth. And happy holidays, of course, to my good friend and co-host for this evening, Jeff Goodman. How you doing, Jeff?
Hola, Dave.
Hola a usted, también. No, let's not do that Spanish thing. We tried that
okay. At
the other station, and it was an absolute disaster. This is on a day like we should be doing Hebrew. Yeah.
So shalom, Dave.
Shalom. Shalom, Gveret. Shalom, Adani. Only my wife is laughing at that one. Okay. So anyway, the Daverhood is about comedy, talk radio, music, interviews, sketches, monologues, all that kind of cool stuff.
Peace be with you, Dave.
Shalom be with you, too.
No. Well, that was for our little Catholic or Christian friends out there.
We don't have any.
Okay. Because you're supposed to say, and with you, Jeff.
Oh, is that the thing? Well, and
it's like, peace be with you, and with you.
And may you get peace, Jeff. And stop hitting the table. It makes noise and stuff.
Oh, sorry.
It's all right. Would you like to tell everybody who the wonderful sponsors are for this 215th episode of Dave's Gone By?
Well, for the 215th and probably for the next 50 editions of Dave's Gone By,
Alibi.
Our sponsors are...
Yes.
The Copy Kings of Broadway.
Who are?
You'd say.
Okay, I get it. You're setting me up with a thing here. Mm-hmm. Do it again.
The Copy Kings of Broadway.
Hewlett, Minuteman, press. 10% off on all copy jobs for Dave's Gone By listeners.
Bye.
And what about our other sponsors? Who are they?
And if you want to make money on your friend's mortgages, all you have to go to is to mortgagesrock.com.
You make that sound kind of illegal.
Oh.
Want to make money on your friend's mortgage?
Well, you can earn money with your own mortgage, your friend's
mortgage.
That's
better, yeah.
Refinance your parents' house.
Go ahead, without them knowing it.
It couldn't hurt.
A surprise. Do a reverse mortgage on them and have them out on the street by the time they're 70. No, I'm kidding. MortgagesRock.com is the place to go either to get a loan or to learn how to be a broker. MortgagesRock.com.
Or if you just want to be alone.
Yeah, well, there you go. I want to float alone, as Marlena would have said. Not really. What else? How about the Bible of Broadway?
Oh, would that be Theater Arts Insider?
Theater Arts Insider?
What is it?
What's the matter? You subscribe to this magazine, Jeff.
Something. Broadway, theater?
Performing Arts.
Performing Arts Insider.
You know, I know the co-publisher very well because I'm the other co-publisher. And when we were talking about revamping the magazine and making it better,
you're thinking calling it Theater Arts Insider?
I was going to call it Theater Insider. Or Theater. It used to be
The
called
Insider.
The Insider. Well, no, I think there already is an Insider. But it used to be called Theater Information Bulletin, which was okay. But then you decided to make it more insider-y.
Yes.
Why did you snore at that?
Because it was boring.
How can I be boring in 7 seconds?
No, the old title was boring.
Oh, sorry.
It was a good change.
Yeah, to Performing Arts Insider.
Yes, it was.
He just didn't want to do Theater Insider because he wanted it to encompass dance and opera and awards, which it does. That's what's so special about Performing Arts Insider. It's everything about Broadway, off-Broadway, and all the performing arts in New York.
It's a big pain. P-A-I...
And
newsletter.
What's the N for? Newsletter. For newsletter. Very good. 10% off subscriptions for...
Get the pain on Broadway.
Hey, if you've seen some of the shows we both have, you've had the pain on Broadway. And hey, come on, let's not forget our fourth sponsor.
Oh, that would be me, Dave.
That would be you.
Fancy Schmancy Balloons.
Which is balloons.
for all occasions, for all your party needs.
So in other words, yes, you do
balloons and decorations, not just balloons.
But you can hook
people
up.
We're not just balloons anymore, Dave.
You can hook people up with DJs, you can hook people up
with... We can make your party rock.
If you need drugs for your
party. If you think mortgages rock, we can make your party rock like there's no tomorrow.
That's right. Hey, what a wonderful segue. You know why?
There's no tomorrow?
Well, no, because we have rock in the studio. We have rock and roll. Real, the great stuff, the old stuff, as part of tonight's show. Do you know why?
Where them be?
Them be musically with
us. Tolls, get it? I was giving you another segue.
I missed it. Do it again.
Where them be?
Tolls. Okay. That's more like where them Jethro Tolls, but I don't even know.
No, where them be? Oh, that reminds me, they are a cover... They are a
tribute band
for the Beatles.
To the Beatles, and they're quite good. They're called Mostly Mop Top.
And if you were here last week tuning in, you would have heard them on our pre-show and a little bit on the show, right?
Yeah, we've lost our pre-show. I'm so sad.
Our pre-show went away.
Yeah. I mean, the sports guy is really nice, and he's really put together, and he does a good show, but I'm like, man, you took away our hour, so he's going to have a horrible crash on the highway.
No, don't say that.
What?
Dave, that's so mean.
I'm not saying I caused it. I'm not saying when I was out there before.
No, we wish him well. We wish him well, and we hope there's actually more people listening to him than when listening to us.
Yeah.
Well, there weren't much people listening to us.
At 10 o'clock. Well, you know,
there was, what's her name? What was
her
name from New Jersey?
Nina
from New Jersey.
Yeah.
Nina, we're sorry we weren't on at 10 o'clock.
Not tonight, yeah. But hey.
Nina was probably going, what? I don't want to know about the Yankees. I want to hear about Needless Baloney from the two.
Well, maybe not. Maybe she's a Yankee fan. She's like, you know, Jeff and Dave weren't bad, but this sports show is so much better. It's a shame the sports guy has to die. But anyway, I kid because I hate. So, ladies and gentlemen.
And why do you hate Dave?
I hate everything.
Because
I hate
you
everybody.
Live. You hate because you live.
That's right. And we're going to be talking about that later, too. We're going to be talking about hate speech and radio. A, because in the Inside Broadway segment of tonight's Dave's Gone By, I'm going to talk about the show I saw last week called Talk Radio, revival of the Eric Bogosian play that's now on Broadway and starring Liev Schreiber, who I hate because my wife loves him. And then, let's see. Also, after that, if we have some time, we'll talk about talk radio in general and what Jeff and I do both here and on the station. Stony
what
Brook,
do we do, Dave?
I don't know. Whatever we do, we all get paid for it. But the main thing is that also it came just literally like a day or two after I saw talk radio, Don Imus was in the news with that stupid comment that he made. And yet it's no more stupid than a million comments that you've heard on talk radio from people like him, from Stern, from all the others who are out there goofing in a humorous way and sometimes an offensive way. I don't want to give away the game of what I'm going to say about it, but I think you can guess already. We'll talk about it later. But first, let's get musical. Let's get magical. Let's have a magical mysteryerhood tonight. Don't give me that look, Jeff. I knew it was bad when I said it. I'm just trying for something. Sometimes you have to reach for the unreachable pun. To dream the impossible wordplay. To write the unbearable lexicon.
Okay, let's go where we dare not go.
To the Mostly Mop Top Band, right after these messages.
One, two, three. He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he's going to. Isn't he a bit like you and me? Nowhere man, please listen. You don't know what you're missing. Nowhere man, the world is at your command. La 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 la. As blind as he can be, just sees what he wants to see. nowhere, man, can you see me at all? Nowhere, man, don't hurry, take your time, don't hurry, leave it all to somebody else, lend you a hand. Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he's going to. Isn't he a bit like you and me? Nowhere, man, please listen. You don't know what you're missing. Nowhere, man, the world is at your command. He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans. Making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Making all his nowhere plans for nobody.
Thank you, Dave.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this Sunday night, a musical Sunday night it is, because I've got four guests in the studio. They're kind of like the Beatles, only not, only sort of yes, because it's Dave Mania tonight on Dave's Gone By.
Dave's
not the Beatles, but an incredible simulation called Mostly Mop Top, a Long Island band, and they're here. We're going to hear a bunch of their music, or probably we have been hearing a bunch of their music by now in this episode, but
days have gone by since he's done it, you know.
Oh, there's the jong of Anthony. Is it Pomus or Pomus or Doc Pomus?
It's Pomus, actually.
Not chewing gum.
No. It's Edgar Allan Pomus Daisy. That's a good mnemonic device. So it's Anthony Pomus, yes, indeed. Hello.
Hello, Anthony. And are you the leader, or are you just one of four?
Well, you know, we all take turns with that one. You know, Paul kind of got us started Paul started it all in the beginning, and he'll tell you more about that. But as far as on stage, I do project most of the jaundice. And just to give you a bit of who the other people are, John Tobacco is our drummer. He's sometimes Paul and occasionally George. And on bass, we have Paul Michael Balkin, and he's sometimes George, occasionally Ringo, and even sometimes John. And on guitar, we have Eddie Franz, who's sometimes John, sometimes Paul, sometimes George, and ever so slightly Ringo. And I just sort of hang him in the middle, you know. Sometimes I'm a walrus, and sometimes I play the fool. Really is up to you.
Let's hear from other walruses.
Oh, say hello, John.
Yeah.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having us on.
You sound just like one of the Beatles. Yeah. You're very welcome.
A Japanese one at that.
Hey, Dave. Good to be here.
No, who's that? Who just...
Eddie.
You've got to... Pretty much every time one of you talks, you've got to identify who you are. There's no cameras.
You mean even after we leave the show, right?
Yeah. Eddie? So that was Eddie, and now...
Who else?
And I'm Paul, and I sing George, and I do a really good, bad Liverpool accent.
Indeed. Yeah. So how did you guys start? That's the usual question.
Well,
I turn the amps on.
Many years ago, Paul Balkin had a very interesting idea in which he wanted to create something which ultimately has become known as the Beatles Magical Orchestra, but he transcribed all of these Beatles songs and made them for many, many different instruments. And that was back in the high school / college years. Later on, as time went on, Paul sort of found John, and Paul sort of found Eddie, and then John sort of found Paul, and then they, all three of them, sort of found me. I was sort of the last piece before we all clicked and became what we are now, which is a group.
In between being able to put together a full 40-piece orchestra for a young people's concert, which is what I was originally trying to do, we wanted to have fun in the meantime and play out. And so we created Mostly Mop Top, which is mostly the Beatles. And like the Beatles, we don't just play the Beatles, because they like other music, and so do we.
Oh, I didn't realize that. So you do other covers of what?
Occasionally we play some Randy Travis or Stravinsky.
Some Zappa.
The Popeye theme song. Anything that strikes us, you know.
No, but seriously, like, do you actually play
Yes, we do. Yes, we'll play occasionally a Kinks or maybe a Stone song or even a Monkey song, which gives me a nice little segue plug to the fact that we're going to be playing at Paula Jean's Supper Club in Isetawket on the evening of Friday, April 20th. And our special guest that night is is none other than former Monkey Peter Tork.
All right.
We have a CD release. Hi, Peter. We have a CD release party happening for him there at Paula Jean Supper
Club. I believe we're his special guest.
Okay.
His CD release party, although we're the featured band.
His new album is called Cambria Hotel, and we're going to be the house band that night, so if you guys want to come down and hear some of our groovy music, sit to a more of a blues beat than you've been hearing tonight, actually. We're kind of putting a blues spin on the whole thing.
Yeah, we called the Nature's Son.
In a blues Zydeco kind of feel.
And by the way, Peter is, quote unquote, a friend of the neighborhood because he appeared on this show about a year and a half ago, hoping to actually get him back on as well very, very soon. And, you know, in cahoots with his appearing.
It'll be a Dave New World when he comes on.
Thank you so much. Yeah. So, we'll go one by one. Favorite Beatles song, favorite Beatle?
Where do you want to start it? Because he's looking at one of us, but we're not going to tell you which one.
Okay.
Somebody else has to pick.
And again, identify yourself.
Okay, this is Anthony, and I'm the John character. And I think when all is told, A Day in the Life is probably my favorite Beatle track.
Okay. And which is your favorite? Are the Beatle that you're doing is your favorite, John?
Well, I'm not doing any of them. I do like...
Certainly not John or George.
No, they have lost. But I think John, in the end, is the most primal of the Beatle voices, the one that sort of sticks in my marrow all my life. But, you know, each of them gave their own little moment and own little time. I love George Harrison's I Need You from the Help album. Just a wonderful, wonderful song. Cool. But that's where I'm at, you know.
And?
Hi, this is John Tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really have a favorite Beatles song. There's too many I like, and the Beatles had such a big influence on my own music that, you know, every one of them kind of influenced what I do musically.
Great. So. Okay. And your favorite Beatle?
I was very upset when Lennon was shot, and I was very sad when George Harrison died, and Ringo and Paul are still around, so God bless them. Yeah. I don't have a favorite Beatle.
Yeah, okay. A favorite Rolling Stone, perhaps.
I know Keith Richards. He's a very nice man.
How do you know Keith Richards?
I was invited to his house.
Why?
Well, we have a different kind of digital technology we're trying to have him take a listen to, and he liked it a lot, and he said he wanted to be part of the company, but unfortunately... things didn't work out with his manager and stuff. So.
But he was going. Doesn't he live on some weird island or something?
No,
he
actually lives in.
He lives in Connecticut.
That's kind of a weird island.
Have you been there?
Was it Western? The Isle of Connecticut? Connecticut, yeah.
So I will get to you guys, but come on, you've met Keith Richards. I mean, any anecdotes, anything? Can he offer you beer, drugs?
He's very much like, did you ever see the movie Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yeah, of course. He's going to be in the third one.
Yeah.
Himself, sort of.
He is the third one.
He really is like that.
He acts naturally.
And his wife, Hawk.
You know what? It was very interesting, you know, because I like the Stones, but obviously the Beatles... a whole other
sure,
thing for me.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I talked to Keith and I asked him a lot of questions about the Beatles.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. And he said that the Rolling Stones were considered a little filthier than most groups at the time. He said the Beatles were just as filthy.
Oh.
And he said they were all good friends.
Yeah.
Great.
And
well, they gave them one of their first big hits.
Yeah, George Harrison actually got them the deal.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, George Harrison actually
I didn't
got
know
them
that.
The deal.
Cool.
And he was good friends with John. Obviously, they did the Rock and Roll Circus, which eventually came out.
Yeah. In fact, I just showed that on
he said something very
TV recently.
About Paul,
yes,
he said something interesting about Paul McCartney. I actually have a fact. He said, Paul is a friend of no one's.
Ooch.
Yeah.
Well, I probably meant it more in the kind of elusive third man, Harry Lime, kind of Orson Welles way.
Dude. I mean, obviously they go way back as almost childhood friends.
Right.
But he just said that Paul is very, just got his own thing. He's kind of, he's kind of cut off from the rest of the world on some level.
Didn't you say Keith chews a lot of onions, too?
Keith eats a raw onion every day. That's what keeps him alive.
Well, he's replaced all his blood like 15 times in his life, so that's it. That's the secret, the onions.
Cut down on the autograph hounding, though, with that.
So there's a lot to talk about with Keith, but we're not here for that, right?
Not at all. We're here to talk to Eddie and Paul.
That's right, and please continue where we're asking the mostly mop-top Beatles cover band who their favorite Beatles are and their favorite Beatles song. And your?
I'm Eddie Franz. My favorite Beatles song, it's tough. I'd say She Loves You.
Oh, cool.
Off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. Good one.
Favorite Beatle? Billy Preston.
good answer. Yeah. By the way, we're a tribute band and not a cover band, because tribute, we feel, has a slightly more reverential vibe.
Cool, yeah. Absolutely. And finally, last but not least.
Yeah, and last but not least, I'm Paul Michael Barkan, and good Lord. Favorite Beatles song?
We'll be back after these messages.
Penny Lane, obviously, has a real
place in my heart, mostly because it's like one of those songs, like, how could anybody have written that? It's such a good song. And this was a little kid saying this. I mean, because I go back all the way to the beginning. I mean, I was 6 years old when they appeared on Ed Sullivan. Uh-oh, everybody knows my age now. And the thing about the Beatles is that they connected emotionally with me so well. There was a song in the Beatles catalog for every situation I had growing up. And they were all my favorite songs at that moment.
Especially Pauline Pam. I mean, I don't know.
I was already grown up and unemotional by then.
By the way, you know, just as a jump back, there's another song of mine that's a kind of an equal favorite with A Day in the Life. And that one, for me, is John Lennon's I say John Lennon because he was principally responsible for it. But I Am the Walrus just sticks with me. Day in, day out is one of the most intense songs, and the lyrical quality, it's just so surreal. You know, the opening line is so, you could base an entire religion around, I am he is you are me, and we are all together. It's just an amazing image. And just as another sideways segue, kind of like plug on things that are going on in our universe, Paul and I are part of something called the John Lennon Center of Music and Technology at Five Towns College. We're advisory board members there. And Five Towns College will be unearthing and debuting for the first time in the U.S. a play that John Lennon wrote in late 1967 with Victor Spinetti from the Hard Day's Night and Help films, and also Miss Adrienne Kennedy, a very influential African-American playwright. And the play is called In His Own Right, based on his nonsense books from the 64 and 65.
Not just everybody else.
Yeah, not to us, of course.
Yeah.
But those plays are going to be debuting on June 8th and June 9th. That's a Friday night and a Saturday night. We're doing it in kind of a workshop style because it's a very avant-garde, surrealistic piece. You're only going to have 2 nights to see this thing. And like I said, it's going to be at Five Towns College at the Dix Hills Performing Arts Center. And it's the first time it will be ever performed in the USA.
Whoa, I had no idea about that. That's
well, I wanted to make this as newsworthy
a
visit as we possibly can.
It sure
it is.
It's
a scoop, Dave. Listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB. It's better than brown paper bags.
And let everybody know, you mentioned the Peter Tork thing. Yep. Where are people going to be able to see you in, say, April, May? And then any big plans for the next year ahead? Are you guys going to put out maybe a CD or what?
Yeah, well, we have a MySpace page. So if you go to the music section of MySpace.com and you plug in Mostly Mop Top, and you're too smart to not spell it right for yourself, so I'm not going to spell it out. All right, M-O-S-T-L-Y, M-O-T-T,
Oh, I misspelled it. M-O-S-T-L-Y, M-O-P-T-O-P, mostly Mop Top. Put that into MySpace.com. You can see our page. You can see our faces. You can see our sound. You can see our lyrics and all that sort of stuff. And we have a blog on there. We talk about what we're doing. To answer your question on behalf of the band, this summer, every summer, basically, we do all these gigs during the summer at this place called the Beach Hut. There are about three or four different locations.
Yeah.
Paul's going to say there are a couple different locations around the island. You can go online and look up
Lindenhurst, Cedar Beach. Sometimes we go all the way out to Shinnecock.
Yeah.
Watch your language.
Which, exactly. It's not a verb. It is a noun. And what another thing we're going to be doing, which is important to say right here and now, is we are doing a show in October of this year at the Patchogue Theater for the Performing Arts. We're returning there after selling out about 2 years ago. Selling out. That sounds funny. We did a Rubber Soul 40th anniversary show. And this year, we're doing a show called, basically the concept is Get Backwards Show. We're going to do the show in reverse chronological order. And what do you think of that idea, Eddie?
And was it going to start with Let It Be and Abbey Road?
Yeah, basically we're going to start right at the end. Start with the breakup and build up to Beatlemania. Basically, we want to leave people on such a key high that they never want to come back down again, which is where we've been for 30 plus years.
They'll have a rare chance to hear that song from Hamburg, Cry for a Shadow.
Oh, cool. How about Leave My Kitten Alone?
It's funny. We're the only band who does that.
That's a great number.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, if we do it badly, there might be a reason, but we actually do it well.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with mostly Mop Top. Do catch them. Do check out their MySpace page as you're hearing the. I just want to. I'm being directed to ask you a question. What do you think is the main legacy of the Beatles? What's the one thing that they brought to the world that's most important? And identify thyself.
Hi, this is John Tobacco. What the Beatles brought to the world, I mean, obviously, was songs that are so ingrained in the DNA of human beings. That, you know, it's they brought togetherness and community, which is one of the few things. I mean, it's one of the few things where the Beatles, in many ways, for most people, are like a religion. But it's like a good thing where you can really share it. It's not something the music is what's shared. It's not a money sort of thing, you know.
Yeah. It's entirely non-divisive.
Yeah.
And I know I speak for myself because I'm here, but I think I speak for the group as well. I think so. I might not be, but we tend to get all of our richest gifts and grandest themes of our lives from this music we play together as bandmates and as brothers through this cosmic shadow we call life.
Wow, the cosmic neighborhood.
This is Eddie. The best thing with the Beatles for me, what I see, is it makes you want to sing.
Oh.
Like I have little children, and I'm introducing them to the Beatles.
Yeah.
And the first thing they do is they sing. It just makes you...
I used to sing myself to sleep with Beatles songs. This is absolutely true. For a couple of years, I did that. And I was already in my 30s. So, anyway, guys, we have to... Got to really wrap this up. But mostly Mop Top, MySpace them, check them out, and you'll be hearing them on this show, how good they are. Guys, thanks so much.
Thanks for having us today.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
I love you, I love you, I love you. That's all I want to say. Until I find a way, I will say the only words I know that you understand. Michelle, my belle, someday mon qui vont très bien ensemble. I need to make you see, oh, what you mean to me. Until I do, I'm hoping you will know what I mean. I love you. I want you, I want you, I want you. I think you know by now I'll get to you somehow. Until I do, I'm telling you, so you'll understand. Michel, ma belle, sans les mots qui vont très bien ensemble, and I will say the only words I know that you'll understand, my Michel.
Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. Inside Broadway it is, on this April 8th, Easter Sunday. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Broadway news, and some off-Broadway news, and then, after a commercial, I'm going to be talking about talk radio, the play, and then we'll be talking about talk radio, the generic term. So do stick around for the rest of this episode of Dave's Gone By. Now we begin Inside Broadway with some, well, pretty big Broadway news. Phantom of the Opera has turned 8,000. That's right, they just had their 8,000th show. At the Majestic Theater. It was a Wednesday matinee, April 4th. It's already the longest-running show in Broadway history, and so they marked it in kind of a nice way. Howard McGillin, who's currently playing the Phantom, made a speech and cut a cake, and then I think they had a little cast party. Now, Phantom has spent...
And then they gave out 8,000 free seats.
Yeah, as if. Although, I'll give credit to the McIntoshes and to Lloyd Webber. They were one of the people, when all the big British mega musicals were coming into Broadway, they were the ones, even though their ticket prices were top tier, to make sure that there was a band of seats that were $15 or $20 for students all the way in the back. So even when prices were going already stratospheric, they made sure with Phantom, and I think with a couple of the other shows that at the time...
I thought Rent was the first one to do that.
Rent had the lottery. Went at all those kooky things of waiting online and a lottery. Phantom, you could go at any time, wait online, show your ID, and I think it was for students and seniors, and get what was then a cheap seat and probably still is. So good for them, and it certainly hasn't hurt Phantom in the box office or in, you know, the how much they've made. They grossed nearly $650 million, highest in history. That's just, you know, domestic, I think. Opened on Broadway January 26, 1988, and so far 11 million people have seen it domestically. 80 million people have seen The Phantom of the Opera worldwide. So happy 8,000. If you've never seen Phantom, it's worth seeing at least once. It's not the greatest show ever, and, you know, when a show's been around that long, you get all the naysayers kicking it and saying, oh, it's not so wonderful, and why is it around, and that's cheesy. And it is a little cheesy and schlocky, but it's also good. And also, visually, it's quite exceptional at certain points. So,
and at one point, it feels really warm.
When
those big flames come on.
What, you mean the chandelier?
No.
Oh, what?
He throws fireballs at him, and then he goes, no, and psh, all the flames come up,
oh,
and
was,
the big
cool
heat wave comes across the audience.
I was thinking more of the, when they first go down into the sewers.
Yeah, oh, it's really visually
terrific. Even now, I mean, I every few years I catch up with Phantom again, and it's still, that scene still works like gangbusters.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just,
well, when they're running up and down, it always works, too.
Yeah, yeah.
When they're running up and down to the Opera House. But, so, you know, another long-running musical is doing something different.
What's that?
The I Love You, You're Perfect Now change.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese Company will arrive at the West Side Theater on May 9th. For a limited engagement of 23 performances through June 3rd. The Chinese cast will perform the entire show in Mandarin with English subtitles projected above.
This is the perfect station to do this on, because that's what GBB has, is Mandarin Chinese.
Isn't that weird, though?
I am you buffet. Okay. What from Karam A? I will go from Karam B. Okay, a little racist comedy here. Dave's gone by. By the way, some not so well.
The way, Seal for Freshness
closes
4/29.
I know. Did you see it?
No.
Don't bother. I reviewed that on the show, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago, and I couldn't imagine. I mean, I thought maybe, like Menopause, the musical, it might build a groundswell of women, but it was like, some laughs. Not terrible, but not too good either. So, Menopause, the musical, still have a few weeks to see it. Still for Freshness. Still have a couple of weeks to see it before it closes at the end of April. Menopause closed a while ago, so don't get your hopes up about that one.
The hot flash is over.
But let me give the important hot flash of news, not on or off Broadway, but regionally. Big thing this week from the Paper Mill Playhouse in Millburn, New Jersey. They were going to close. These guys were going to close forever. And what happened? Well, there was, I guess, some, I don't want to say mismanagement, but the people who were managing it left it in a mess. And there were some recent shows that didn't do very well. And so now they were in such financial straits that they needed $1.5 million in order to stay open and do the show. They're doing Seven Brides for Seven Brothers right now. We're trying to tell you what kind of situation.
Well, actually, they were considering doing Two Brides for Brother and a Half.
One bride, one brother. And it's just a civil ceremony because they can't afford a wedding. Yeah.
With no reception to follow.
But that's the problem. I mean, they did Romance, Romance, which is a very lovely, nice musical, and yet nobody came. Nobody cared.
Yeah.
So now they do something that should bring in everybody, but it's an expensive production, and they don't have the money for it. So they were threatening. They're going to close our doors unless we get some money. Well, turns out, later in the week, they got $300,000 in donations just from regular people, and also there are two real estate companies that are backing a multi-million-dollar loan to the Paper Mill Playhouse. So, even though they are still very, very much in trouble, because their subscribership sank from 45,000 subscribers about 20 years ago to under 20,000 subscribers now, and, you know, their CEO left them in this mess. He's now over at Rhode Island's Trinity Rep. Good luck to them. And, you know, Jeff, have any idea when Paper Mill Playhouse was founded?
1763?
Well, not quite. You gotta add, like, almost 200 more years to that. But it was a paper mill, and stayed that way until...
And then they changed it to a playhouse?
In about 1928, they made the shift, and they had their first season in 1934.
Wow.
Or they found it in 34, and then really started in 38, with a show called Kingdom of God. But...
I remember that one.
They've had some hard times. But recently, they did have a couple of Broadway shows. Remember the You Can't Take It With You came to Broadway back in 1984. Mm-hmm. And that revival of I'm Not Rappaport in 2002 was from the Paper Mill.
Hmm.
So, two Broadway flops. What can I tell you?
Yeah, thank you, Paper Mill.
Well, anyway, so on the happier side of things, A, they're still running. They got some of the money.
At least for this year.
And going off Broadway, the... Lucille Lortel nominations were announced.
Yay.
They were like the first. Usually Outer Critics Circle is first out of the gate, but Lortel is now kind of swooping in earlier. Spring Awakening, your favorite show, had six nominations.
Yes.
Now, up for Best Play from the Lortels, which only do off-Broadway.
Right.
The Busy World is Hushed, Dying City, Indian Blood, and David Hare's Stuff Happens. As for musicals, the contenders are Gutenberg the Musical, which I really want to see.
I need to.
In the Heights, Spring Awakening, and Striking 12.
Oh. Boom, so boom, boom.
That was
boom,
supposed
boom,
to be very good, too. So that's a pretty good feel for the musicals, I'll tell you that much.
Jeez.
So anyway, those are the Lucille Lortel nominations, and I guess the winners, I didn't write that down, but it's probably coming in a couple of weeks. Anyway.
I have some news.
Oh, what, Jeff?
Big Broadway cast changes.
Oh, da.
Sutton Foster is leaving Drowsy Chaperone.
Oh, ho, ho.
In 2 weeks.
2 weeks? Who's coming in?
She's been replaced by...
Talking to the mic.
Janine LaManna.
Oh, Janine LaManna. Remember her from Seussical?
Yes.
And also, she was in Theda Bara and the Frontier Rabbi.
No,
that was the
really?
First time I saw her. And I was like, she's damn good.
Actually, the musical was pretty good, too, but nothing ever came of it. As you would expect from a musical called Theda Bara and the Frontier Rabbi. But anywho, what else, Jeff? Who else is cast changing?
Oh, wait, no. I'm sorry. She's only going to be in it for a little while.
Okay. Oh, she's stepping in for something or what?
Take over the role, Janet Van de Greffel.
See, this is why I prepare these things in advance rather than glancing at
it. Neil LaMonda will take over the role.
Yes.
Hold on.
Jeff and his laptop. Yeah.
We'll take over the role of Janet Van de Greffel from Sutton Foster. We'll play her final performance on April 15th.
Okay. Stop picking the table.
Currently playing Maggie in the Broadway revival of A Chorus Line, will assume the role of Janet on July 31st.
Who's that? Who?
Mara Davey.
Mara Davey. Okay, interesting.
So,
well, good.
If you want to see Janine LaManna, hurry.
Right. If you want to see Sutton Foster, hurry really quick.
No, they have the same amount of time. It's two weeks.
Yeah, no, but Sutton Foster is like, she's pretty special.
But one of the people I didn't really expect to leave the show is leaving the show.
Drowsy Chaperone?
Yeah.
Who?
Georgia Engel.
Oh, well, Edward Hibbert left a while ago to do curtains.
Right.
So Engel's, where's she going?
But guess who's replacing her?
Is it someone? This is going to be fun because I really don't know this answer.
Okay.
But I need obviously a hint. Is it also a television person?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll give you 10 questions.
10 questions? I don't have that much time in the show. Okay. Let's see. Animal Vet? No. Is she from a 70s sitcom?
No.
80s sitcom?
No.
60s sitcom?
Yeah.
Barbara
Eden. Not a sitcom, a variety show.
A variety show. Cal Burnett?
No.
Let's see. Leader of a variety show or a second banana?
It's supporting, an ensemble player.
An ensemble player in a variety show.
But a fairly famous one.
A female?
Yes.
Hmm.
To play Mrs.
Oh, not the one on the Carol Burnett show that Vicky Long.
No.
No. Okay, good. It's not the Carol Burnett show, then.
No.
Okay. How many questions is that?
Seven.
Already?
Well, that's why I'm going to give you more.
Thank you. Let's see. Let's share.
No. Why don't you just kind of try and figure out...
I got to do this quickly because the clock's ticking, but...
After 10, I'll give you a really easy clue.
Okay. Well,
Two more quick questions.
Variety show, ensemble player, but of note, in the 1960s.
Yeah.
Who was in the Smothers Brothers, for crying out loud? Or laugh at Goldie Hawn.
No, but you're very close.
Ruth Buzzy.
No.
Oh, come on. Joanne Worley, I saw this. I did see
Yes!
This. I have to admit, I did kind of glance at that story and remembered it in the back of my mind, and now it was just jogged my memory. Well, cool. So Joanne Worley is going into Drowsy Chaperone.
But that's weird. She's playing not a Joanne Worley-type character.
At all, yeah. Although she may make it.
And remember her last Broadway...
The Prince of Central Park. She was good. And it wasn't a terrible show. It just wasn't that good. Anyway, let me get on with Inside Broadway because I want to review talk radio after this commercial, and then we'll be talking talk radio on this episode of Dave's Gone By on this April 8th, 2007. Don't go away. Welcome back to Inside Broadway on Dave's Gone By. Well, went to Broadway last week and saw a show that has just stayed with me and gotten under my skin, possibly because I'm a little biased towards the subject matter. No, that's not even a joke. I mean, I never saw the original production of Talk Radio with Eric Bogosian. I did see the movie a few years back, but do not remember it particularly. So, Talk Radio. With Liev Schreiber in the Eric Bogosian role, and a bunch of other people. Everybody was under the assumption it was a one-person show, but it's not. But that main person is such a focal point for the play, which is about a talk radio host, a nasty kind of vituperative late-night talk radio host on a Cleveland, Ohio station. And it's played by Liev Schreiber. The character name is Barry Champlain. He comes in there, and it's his world. He sits down, and he's a complete a-hole from A to Z. Now, sometimes he gets a caller, he's on the mic, and he says things that are, forceful and out there, and you agree with him. And sometimes you're looking at him, and he's just being nasty for the sake of being nasty, or you're like, how can he say that? And then, boom, it's off to the next caller, and boom, off to the next caller. And then the drama of the piece is not just watching him in action, but also knowing they Bogosian, the playwright, inserts two
big things in there that keep the tension up. One is that sponsors have been looking at the show, and Champlain has been building this big audience so that this is the last show before he has the opportunity to take the show national via syndication. So all the sponsors are listening, and the guy from the station is there, and his colleagues are there, and they're telling him, you know, be good, make this a great show, do your best, don't offend anybody too much, because everything's riding on this. If we get this, this goes, you know, the money goes insane, and you go all over the country, not just in Ohio. The other thing is, as with late night weird talk radio, you get all the weirdies. Jeff and I know this from doing the big time.
Really? Weird people call?
Oh, remember the guy that called us who obviously told us he was doing bong hits while we were on the air? That was when he called him going, and smoking from a bong. These are the people who get at 4 o'clock in the morning calling into talk radio. So he gets these, and mostly they're harmless. But he does get one fellow named Chet, who seems really vaguely threatening, and not so vaguely, and then he gets a package addressed to him, the Barry Champlain does, at the station, which could be a bomb, might be a bomb, might not be a bomb, and there's always this looming sinister threat going on, and especially since the play was written not so long after the murder of, well, it was a few years after the murder of Alan Berg, who was a noted sensationalistic and angry talk show host who got off his shift one night, went to his car, and was shot in the head in the parking lot. Well, that doesn't happen in this particular play, but there's still the ominousness is there, and we're also watching this man who is in control of his little universe. And yet, of course, we learn that he cannot control anything else, least of all himself. And so you're watching, on one level, someone who's at the peak of his command of his art, if you can remotely call it an art, and yet, at the same time, unfortunately, as he's downing pills, as he's downing drugs, as he's, you know, doing everything, unraveling before us. Now, aside from the fact that it's a pretty good, exciting thing, and that I love radio, and to watch someone sit there and do talk radio and take these phone callers, Liv Schreiber, much as I hate to say it because my wife is completely in love with him, he's tremendous. It's really an exceptional performance. As good as he was in Glengarry Glen Ross last season, he is the show here. You see him, he comes out, he sits down at that mic, he's a little scruffy, and yet absolutely, like, on top of things, and like, here
just
there.
Just like us.
And he maintains that, and yet at the same time, you watch him slowly losing it, going out of control, and being affected by the pills he's taking, by the booze he's drinking. It's just, you cannot take your eyes off what he is doing, or the command of his performance. It's really exceptional, and a lot of the other performers are pretty darn good, too. So I have to give this one absolutely 3.5 to 4 stars. It's terrific.
Does that get the David seal of approval?
Four seals of David's approval. Not the least of which is the fact that it's just had me thinking about the play ever since I've seen it, and has even affected the way that I've been behind the mic. And we'll get into that after these messages. We've just been inside Broadway, thanks to TogleTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Yes, indeed, Dave goes off on a rant on a monologue on some thoughts. It won't be a monologue because I'm lucky enough to have Jeff Goodman, my guest co-host, with me.
It'll be a monologue plus one.
That's right, a duologue. But it really is so appropriate to call it Dave Goes Off because that's what talk radio, the play, is about. And that's what I've been thinking about all week. A, because Jeff and I were in Stony Brook just a couple of days ago, not doing our regular show, The Big Time, which we do every other Friday from 3 until 6:30 in the morning on WUSB,
We were doing an earlier version of the Big Show.
Yeah, big time. We were filling
in.
With two big shoes. Like, we were on for 2.5 hours, then we took a 2-hour break, and then we filled in for another show. So all told, we were doing like 4.5 hours of radio that day, which we loved, which was great fun, and we were excited. And we got so many phone calls, especially in that first show, when things started cooking. That really made me feel like, aha.
Oh, yeah, when we talk about interracial stuff, it's nuts.
They call. And also when you talk at 3 in the afternoon instead of 3 in the morning, kind of a difference in the reaction that you get.
A little bit.
But that was exciting to me.
I like our 3 in the morning maniacs.
I do, except, you know, it wreaks havoc on your sleeping patterns and blah, blah, blah. But what I'm saying about what we did a couple of days ago, I want to get serious about this. It's like, I really felt like, aha, this is Real Talk Radio. What we're doing here right now, this is it. We're fielding the calls. I get off with one caller in about 40 seconds, and I've got to go to the next one because there's someone else, and there's someone. And say your piece, and if you don't have a point, then come to the point quickly or call back when you have one. And not to be nasty, but you want to be nice to people and yet get to them. It's funny, when you don't have any callers, you want to keep them on the line as long as you can and total with them and get the most out of them. Well, suddenly the phones are lighting up. And here's that natural reaction to be like, okay, hey, great, thank you for calling, gotta go. Okay,
and yet, David, you lost so many calls because you wouldn't get off the phone with some of these people.
Who?
David was falling in love with a guy named David who was cooking a bunny.
Oh, no, he was the first call. No one called while he was talking.
No, but there were other people who called, and you know, there were two callers, and you...
Oh, I think I lost one accidentally, but anyway, I'm still finding my sea legs with it. And yet, at the same time, I felt myself having that kind of dictatorship feel about it. Because it wasn't just me at the mic or talking to Jeff or playing some music. It was me like, okay, I'm in command. You're talking to me. You don't waste my time.
You're
say
in
something.
Command.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, what was I?
And that is a good point, too. Because when we do the big time, that's a mutual show between Jeff and myself. See, Dave's gone by my show. And Jeff comes on as a guest co-host when he's invited.
And occasionally lets me talk.
Occasionally. On the big time, it's 50-50, or at least it should be. And yet since I'm the one who is trained at that radio station, I'm the one manning the board and the phones and the stuff.
What David's trying to explain is that I'm the idiot.
I'm the Roy Cohn of the deal. I'm sort of out there that the octopus with the suckers on all the things.
Really?
And Jeff just shows up, and everybody loves him. Because all you have to do is show up and be cute and funny and whatever.
Uh-huh.
Even though you tend to be sometimes nastier than I am, which is pretty interesting. But people don't... See, they don't think you're doing it.
They haven't met my sister or my dentist.
Hey, did you hear about... I don't want to go too far afield, but you hear about that dentist who peed in the sink?
No.
He's like, he's up on charges because this dentist was peeing in the sink that he was sterilizing his instruments in.
Well, isn't that how you sterilize something? You know, if you have a wound, in like...
Hey, you know, you're right. It's the wee-wee method. But anyway, already I'm going a little far afield on this. And then what happened was we came back for the second show, and I was a little tired, you know, and we had that break in the middle. So we get on the air, and the first thing that happens is we get a phone call. Right? Remember this? Who calls in because she's...
Why
angry.
Did we cancel the reggae?
Why did Jeff and I... Why were we responsible for the death of reggae on WUSB? And of course we didn't. That particular
I would never kill reggae.
I might kill a couple of reggae people if they were smoking too close to me, but other than that, so I wanted to tell her, no, reggae is just preempted this week because the guys couldn't make it in, and they asked for people to fill in. They couldn't get to the station. And aside from the fact that the station had just had a reggae marathon like 2 months earlier, where they took 5 whole days, days and nights, and played nothing but reggae,
and
preempting us.
And they shoved us off the air.
Yeah. So this woman, all she does is calls up, she says her nasty little piece about, and doesn't stay on the line, doesn't want to have a discussion, just click. And so I went off on her. Not FCC way, I called her the B word, which, you know, I gave my wife and I have been arguing about all week, and on different levels. But, and I called her an idiot, and some other things. And so, because I really felt it at that moment. If you asked me right this second, was it nice to call her that? Is that what I should have called her?
You know, maybe not. Maybe if she stayed on the line, I would have been a little more sanguine, or we would have had more of a conversation. But the minute she hung up, I suddenly felt like, whoa, you're not yelling at me, and you're not giving me a chance to get back at you. And immediately I started channeling Barry Champlain from talk radio. I started going like, really? Almost in my head I was thinking, I was like, who is this woman? What's wrong with her? Doesn't she realize, if idiot, if you're listening, let me tell you this, 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 and this. And there was such a feeling of power, not a nice feeling, but an exciting feeling going through me when I was doing that, you know, it made me start to think, aha, that's what the play is half about, and the danger of that as well. I mean, what are your thoughts about that? Because we can also, as we have a little bit of time, talk about the idea.
About you going off and going nuts?
I didn't go nuts. Did I go nuts?
You were really, really upset.
Yeah, I got angry. I do. I'm pretty.
I just feel sometimes people say the wrong things, and
yeah,
they're just crazy. And when you go off on a rant on them, you bring yourself down to her level.
Now, see, that's what my wife thinks. You know, that I was not something I should have said or done. As I drink the little water by the microphone. Well, what do you think of the Imus? Let's explain what happened with Don Imus. Just like 2 days after this, not like my incident was even remotely an incident, but yeah, you've heard about this. I told you about
this. Yes, yes.
Don Imus was talking about a high school women's basketball team, a really good one, a winning team, and from a district, I assume, that was...
No, it was the Rutgers women's basketball
right,
team.
Right, of whom I'm assuming several members were not white. Am I right?
Maybe I think they're all not white.
Oh, well, okay. It kind of makes it worse. Because what did he say, Jeff?
I don't know.
He called them... He said, well, they look rough. You know, they're not the prettiest, most attractive high school girls. And he said they look like, quote, nappy-headed hoes. Now, yes, it's offensive. Yeah, I didn't hear the whole context of it. And I guess it was pretty stupid. And I could see them being pretty offended of this kind of description. But if you look at all the words in that sentence, nappy, I mean, that's mm-hmm. right of Maya Angelou, headed, well, people have heads, and then ho. Ho is a word that has been thrown around on
every
television.
Isn't that what Santa says?
That's right. He says whore, whore, whore. that's what I hope my Santa will bring me this year. But so if you put the words together, they're not FCC offensible. And they're not particularly... You know, again, if someone like a black comedian had said it, or even think of a black comedian that would work in that sort of level, it would be it wouldn't be the nicest thing to hear, but it would be funny. People would go, oh, well, yeah, I've seen them on the basketball. They're a bunch of nappy-headed hoes. Why can't we get some good-looking basketball players? But if Don Imus says it, and because he is white, and privileged, and been around, and known for being offensive, and known for being sort of a southern, middle America kind of cracker offensive, then people take it, and of course, who but Al Sharpton would jump up and start saying, not only, oh, he should apologize, or oh, he's insensitive, or oh, he's wrong. Jeff, could you please, what is wrong with your computer?
Sorry, I was surfing, and I surfed on the wrong page.
Yeah.
And it won't shut up!
Okay. Can't you... Well, see, it's a laptop that is battery-operated, so...
Hold on, I'm going to take it out of the room.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for ruining the segment, Jeff. See, now I'm going to talk about Jeff in an angry sort of Barry Champlain kind of way. Jeff, who can't even pay attention long enough to the segment that I'm doing here, that he has to be surfing a website while listening to me talk instead of engaging in a conversation. So, so right now I'm assuming if he's not too stupid, he's able to turn off his computer. Yes, idiot Jeff? Are we back? Are we back in the swing of things?
Yes.
Now, I don't really mean those words. I'm just
as you were going, I'm like sitting here, and I knew what you were saying, so I'm like surfing to find out something more about talk radio so I can edit something in.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, I picked up this story about it, and it was a clip from...
Nothing that would get us...
No, nothing. Oh, okay. There's nothing said.
If you can get... I'm just saying nappy-headed hose, maybe on YouTube, that would be helpful. That would be really cool. Or certainly the context that it was in. But Jeff, forget the computer for a minute. Talk to me. We're on the air.
I'm talking to you.
What do you
I got
think
ears and I got eyes.
Should I must be punished? What do you think is the
I
thing?
Think I must needs to learn about being nice. I think that was just a
after all these years. By the way, you're listening to WGBB.
It was a terrible, terrible thing to say. Sorry.
Well, yes. Has he not said a million terrible things? Oh, has not Howard Stern said a million terrible things daily about black, white, Jewish, retarded women?
I don't know. I don't like the term nappy-headed hoe. I yeah. really don't like that
you
term.
You wish you had a nappy head. I wish I had a nappy head at this point.
I don't really care, but I was kind of offensive.
Really? Well, for the moment, I was too.
It was like, what? And I think what he was doing, he does that just for shock value, and I don't like when people do that for shock value. Mm. You know, I don't think there was anything funny about it. I think it was a totally racist remark with no redeeming, you know, humor in it.
That I think is a pretty good point. Humor excuses almost anything, but when it's kind of like, funny but not really meant to be that funny.
There was nothing funny.
It was snarky.
About that.
It was snide, rather than like a joking, not loving, but at least kind of a.
I mean, if you called Donald Trump a nappy-headed hoe, that would be funny.
Yeah. Was it bald-headed hoe now? Any? Oh no, the other guy.
McMahon
had a shave. Not. Yeah. Oh darn. But
so
but
that was all fixed anyway.
Do you throw Imus off the air?
I wouldn't throw him off the air, but I would certainly make him do community service. I would certainly make him apologize.
He did, and he'll have to apologize 25 times, and
then
accept it.
Yeah, and I think he should be made. I think he should be fined, and at least half of the fine should go to the Rutgers women's basketball team.
Oh, that's clever. That is clever. But
you should when you're fined, it should go to the people you hurt.
Well, let's see who was hurt by Janet Jackson's booby. She was fined half a million, not she, but CBS was fined half $1 million for that Super Bowl quote unquote incident.
Well, maybe it should go to like quality programming and television. Maybe they should like pick up
public
two on
broadcasting,
the aisle.
So they don't have to do pledge months.
Yeah.
All right.
But, you know.
And that way public broadcasting could show Janet Jackson's nipple, because that's what public broadcasting is for. The stuff you can show on broadcast.
I think take the $500,000.
Yeah.
And produce a show called the Janet Jackson's Nipple Show, where the nipple just talks all night.
That'd be interesting.
Speaking to the nipple, please.
Yeah, I think they could milk that for at least 13 episodes. But I'm bumped. I need my comedy bell for that one.
Where is your comedy bell?
My comedy bell's in the drawer, so I can't really get it right now. But just everyone imagine the comedy bell ringing after that nipple joke.
Do you want me to get a ring?
No. Don't leave your computer alone. Please. So, if then you feel that Imus should be penalized monetarily for that phrase, what about all the things that someone like a Howard Stern has said? Every time.
Well,
you know.
You know, if you have a certain amount of public trust. And I don't think Howard Stern has been... See, Howard Stern is more clever than Don Imus.
So we reward the fact that he has a few more IQ points? And
well,
that his
no.
joke
as
is
long
funnier?
As he's not offensive. What
wow.
Don Imus... What's offensive? Tell me. I don't listen to
I don't
Howard
find
Stern
generally... But millions, thousands of people certainly find
well, what
Stern
they, you know,
offensive to women.
Well... No, but that's because he makes fun of women and stuff like that. And if they're offended by that, then they turn off the radio. But I think that when you make a comment specifically directed, it was specifically directed at the Rutgers women's basketball
yeah.
team. And that's wrong. If you want to call all black women nappy-headed hoes, that's okay.
Wait a minute. Somehow I find that actually more offensive.
Do you?
Don't you? If you want to
well,
if
I mean,
you want
if,
a blanket
if he
statement.
Does it as kind of... A universal, I can't explain where if it was a universality about it, but just specifically, you know, if I came on the air and started
if you
calling
came on the
you,
air, we'd definitely get fined. What? No, I don't know what that means. Yeah.
I'm going to fine you soon.
Okay, yeah, and you did
I'm lie. Turning on my, I'm turning on my computer.
No,
I'm gonna
no,
play
please,
something
no. Yeah, so if you were on the air and you did what?
No, if you were on the air and you insulted me personally,
Well, that,
I would be upset.
Treason and libel, we get into. That's something else.
Well, that's he was insulting these women personally.
By saying they were not the most attractive ladies?
Yeah.
So what about all these women, all these people who are making fun of Sanjaya Malakar on American Idol? The fact that
Sanjaya is out there in public, in the public view. He chose to be on a television show, which would be a public view.
Yeah.
These women are on a basketball team, not choosing to be, you know, public figures.
No,
they joined the team. They didn't join. They weren't joining for their looks, and they weren't joining for their hairdos. They were joining for their talents and their skill.
But it's kind of like the reverse of, remember that women's soccer team from the Olympics, and they were all really hot, and the woman took off her shirt. And
yes, one of them is on the Apprentice, by the way.
Oh, is she really? Yeah.
Oh, no, wait, no, she was on hockey team.
Oh, okay. Either way, what I'm saying is they did calendars and stuff, and people compliment. You know, the thing was, oh, these are the hot girls, and they.
Well, they only picked the best looking ones of the bunch. There were like 40 people on the team.
Oh, okay, yeah. So the nappy headed hoes weren't picked.
What?
They didn't pick the nappy headed hoes. But if you're allowed to call people beautiful and nice and sexy and whatever, then the converse is you should be allowed to call them as you see them if they're not.
No, you shouldn't make fun of people just because of their looks. It's a terrible thing to do.
There's a corollary about that. I mean, you...
No. So if you want to be nice, if I want to be nice and say, Dave, you're really intelligent and witty and humorous and your show should run...
That's lovely.
From
that,
10
I
to
would
12.
Love that. But if you want to make fun of me because I'm short or my looks or I'm balding, whatever it is, or that I'm not always good on the air, however, that's also part of the freedom of the speech.
But if something...
Well, you can't call me a filthy Jew. Except if you're Jewish and doing it in a laughable... There's such a slippery slope of what should be allowed before you really start
but
to say...
But nappy-headed hoe is offensive.
Okay.
Offensive. Period.
Period. Okay.
And that
I mean, I'm sort of playing devil's advocate because I also sort of agree with you,
mm-hmm.
if you know what I'm saying. Well, what are your impressions more generally also, though, now that we've done some more of this talk radio that's more free form. I mean, mm-hmm. what we're doing right now is closer to what we do in the big time.
Right.
Rather than what we usually do on Dave's Gone By.
Hi, everyone. We're Mostly Mop Top, a Beatles tribute band, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB. Radio at its best.
Radio at its best, ladies and gentlemen. It's 12:17 a.m. on this post-Easter Monday, April 9th.
We're doing a lot of radio-ky today.
Yeah. We didn't really get a chance to do much of that. This was an idea that Jeff had for the big time. Hey, we got one person to do it. Wasn't so bad.
What'd they think?
What did they say? I think they just started saying happy birthday or something.
I don't think they did.
Oh, okay. Well, it didn't take off that day. Jeff's idea was kind of cute. It's just people come on the air with us, kind of in American Idol style.
So if you want to sing, call us.
Yeah.
At area code 631-888-8811.
631-888.
Or if you have any question on Earth, I can answer it right now.
Mr. Answer Man. Come on, you can't resist that, folks. 888-8811.
Ask me a question, Dave.
Area code 631. I've got to ask you a question. Let me see. Okay, well, that's right, because you've got Google in front of you. That helps. But remember, no Wikipedia answers. They can't be trusted. Okay. So, let's see. Can you predict how long our forces will be in Iraq?
No.
You mean something that was in the past, I assume.
Yeah, I want something factual.
Who were the Hottentots?
Hottentots?
Yeah.
Can you spell that, please?
Hot.
H-O-T-T.
And tot.
T-N-T-O-T-T-S.
I guess if you put babies in an oven, they're Hottentots. Okay.
They are a black tribe in South Africa.
Okay.
They have a lot in common with the East Africa tribes.
Yeah. Talking to the mic, Jeff.
And there's also a movie called The Red Hot Hottentots.
Okay. I saw the Red
then
Hot
Then there's
Hot
also something called
Four
Hellestine Hottentots.
Okay.
But would you like to know more about the Hottentots?
Not especially, but I'm glad you answered my simple question simply and directly. That was nice. I kind of like this. This game I kind of like. It's educational.
Mm-hmm.
Who invented the compact disc? I guess probably a corporation at this point. Maybe Sony?
It says here I did.
Are you Al Gore? No. Ha, 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 ha. Just kidding. So,
I have to look in Wikipedia.
All right, well, go for Wikipedia. I'll trust it for radio. I'll trust it.
And this website I'm on is very slow.
Oh, okay.
So it says, let's see.
Dum-de-dum-de.
Oh wait, I think it's Einder, the German Wikipedia.
Einder, we invented the compact disc. We did it to foil the Jews and owning the media.
This is important information regarding compact discs manufacturing.
Uh huh.
In
the mic, Jeff. Yeah. Bring
reading.
The mic lower to you if you need to.
Let's go to the second type of the third type of the technology was developed by Philips and Sony, who are now licensed the technology.
Aha. Uh-huh. So people don't even invent anything anymore.
All licensees must comply with the color book specifications put forth by Philips and Sony.
This is the thing. In the old days, you'd have an Edison, even though it wasn't really Edison who was inventing everything. It was someone in his company. Now it's just the company.
What's interesting,
Philips and Sony, yeah?
Is that the red book is used for CD-DAs, mm-hmm. and the yellow book is used for CD-ROMs.
What the hell are CD-DAs?
The CDs.
And they're the people who prosecute CDs. That's what they are. But anyway.
Let's see.
New question. Enough of that.
Okay.
I've got to think of a better question than that. Let's see. Where did the Easter Bunny idea come from? We're 25 minutes late for that being appropriate, but still.
We're searching. Here come... Go up to Easter Bunny menu. Peter Cottontail. Here comes Peter Cottontail. Popping down the bunny trail.
Yes.
Oh. The Easter Bunny is a traditional holiday character in the form of a giving rabbit with said to leave gifts. Usually the Easter baskets are for children.
Well, did you hear about that story?
What?
There was some school where the
principal... it had its origin, in pre-Christian fertility law. The hare and the rabbit were the most fertile animals known, and they served as symbols.
Okay. It's a spring thing. I get it. That makes sense. The bunny. It's like the Hamantash in the Purim, where Jews eat this candy that's a triangle with prunes and fruit in it, and we were told when we were kids that it was all about Haman's hat. It was supposed to represent the hat of the evil bad guy.
Really, what it was getting us to eat our prunes.
Yeah, no, and also it was a fertility thing. You know, this little triangle with goo inside it. Hello? Not to be sexist
mean?
On the radio, but what do you think? You know?
Yeah. It originates in Western European cultures where it is a hare rather than a rabbit.
Oh.
And in the eastern half of the continent, it is also a long tradition in Hungary. The Easter Bunny is an example of folklore mythology. Other prominent characters are Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy.
Well, you know, and also don't forget the origins that it has in Hindi and also Eastern religions. Haven't you ever heard of the Hare Krishna? Kali Bell! Ring, 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 ring. Okay, Jeff,
okay.
Let's wrap this up. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Anthony Pomus and Mostly Mop Top. Wonderful, cool group. They're going to be playing April 20th. They're opening for Peter Tork and his band Shoe Suede Blues at Paula Jean's Supper Club in East Setauket. That's April 20th. So if you want to hear Mostly Mop Top, they'll be doing Beatles stuff, and they also do some other kinds of music as well. But certainly you want to hear them for their Beatles stuff. April 20th at Paula Jean's Supper Club. And also, Peter Tork has been on this program. He's, of course, the former Monkey, and he really delightful guest about a year and a half ago. We're trying to get him back on really soon, and I'm going to find out this week if that's going to happen. Well, thank
and,
you. Yeah.
And speaking of monkeys, I have two more things about the Easter Bunny, because I find these fun.
Yeah.
The Easter Bunny and his twin brother, Daryl, appeared in an episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Yes!
In which a meatball.
Meatwad, yes.
Was just for the Easter Bunny to appear. Also, in the South Park episode Fantastic Easter Special, it provides an alternative origin of the tradition of the Easter Bunny in an elaborate parody of the Da Vinci Code.
Oh, wow. Did you see that one?
No.
Oh. I would like to.
And you think Wikipedia is worthless.
I don't know. My wife thinks Wikipedia is worthless. Speaking of which, got to thank my beloved and wonderful wife. The reason that I live, the sole reason why this universe functions, my beloved wife, Joyce.
Really?
Who is anything but the stuff that I called that nasty woman on WUSB.
But she is part bunny.
Oh, yeah. She's my little butter bunny. And she knows what that means.
But you're not procreating that much, Dave.
I was going to thank you also. But now...
Nah.
Remind everybody that you can hear a vintage episode of Dave's Gone By every Thursday night and every Saturday night at 11. Two different episodes.
Two different episodes?
On Live365.com's DFSXRadio.com channel.
No way.
Way. Go to davesgoneby.org to find out how. All the links are at my website.
And if you'd like to learn more about the Easter Bunny, Wikipedia.
We will be back next Sunday, April 15th, with the 216th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then.
And what does the error code 216 go to?
216 for a 216th episode next week, what?
I don't know. Let me see.
You do Google that while I tell people, until next week, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you good night. Happy Easter to all my peeps. Happy continuing Passover to all my schleps. Jeff, do you have that area code yet?
Yes, I'm looking up. What is it, 216?
Yeah.
Next week, our big Dave's Gone By will be... Ohio!
Round in the middle, high in... No, round on both ends and high in the middle.
What's high in the middle and round on both ends is actually the...
Yeah, sorry, I goofed that up. But we won't goof up next week when we'll have another great show, possibly Peter Tork. We're not sure yet.
And by the way, the cities include Beechwood, Bedford, Brook Park, Chagrin Falls.
Chagrin Falls,
next
yes.
week we should call Chagrin Falls, just to see if they're a little unhappy. Cleveland, Euclid... It's a Cleveland. Independence, Lakewood, and Maple Heights.
Maple Heights.
And they're in the Eastern time zone, just in case anyone wants to know.
We will be back next week. Good night. Good luck.
And gone by.
If I needed someone to love, you're the one that I'd be thinking of. If I needed someone, if I had some more time to spend, then I guess I'd be with you, my friend. If I needed someone, had you got some other day, then it might not have been like this. But you see, now I'm too much in love. Got your number on my wall, and maybe you will get a call from me. If I needed someone, your number on my